So, I love this story about Thomas. I love everything about it. And I love the way it affirms those of us who doubt. I love the way it shows Jesus, his first words to those who had betrayed and denied him, his first words are words of peace. I love the way it says that there is no closed door that can keep out the power of love. There are at least a dozen sermons in here. Today I want to talk about scars. I think I was drawn in that direction by some conversations this week. And part of those conversations had to do with forgiveness and how we deal with people when they wronged us and how we are when we're the ones who have done the wrong. And what is the right way, the just way, the healing way to respond? And what makes people do things like that to each other in the first place? Anyway, it's been a week. So that's where my head has been. And so when this text came up, the way my thinking went was to think about the wounds and the scars. There's something real and something holy that happened between Jesus and Thomas because of those scars, because of the wounds, because of whatever it was in Thomas that made him stay away that day. And of course, we're only speculating. It just says Thomas wasn't there. Nor was he feeling guilty. Have you ever noticed that if you've done something you know you shouldn't have done, you tend to withdraw? The others had taken off too, but did he just withdraw? Could he just not be with the others? He was the one who had said in John, they came to get him and say Lazarus was dead, and Thomas said, well, let's go with him even to death. And maybe he was saying, if I had not said that, maybe if I hadn't said that, maybe he wouldn't have died. And I don't know, I'm speculating, but you just wonder why he stayed away. Maybe he was angry at the others, because sometimes when horrible things happen, we turn on each other and start going, as a way of deflecting what we're feeling. I don't know, maybe he just went for groceries. I have no idea. But whatever it was inside Thomas, whatever wounds or scars kept him from the room that day, those are the things that led to this moment, and I guess I can't help being thankful that they did. The scars on Jesus' body and the scars in his own being were the means by which Thomas was given new life. And it's a very intimate scene. And it's interesting, to Mary, Jesus said, don't touch me. Don't touch me, I haven't yet ascended, he said. But here, it is so physical. So touch me, here's my hands, And it's beautiful. Thomas touches him, and it's that touch, that level of intimacy that he needs to bring him to faith. He touched Jesus' scars. Scars are funny things. Some people are eager to show you their scars. Have you noticed that? I called this sermon, "Want to See My Scar?" And maybe you've met people like that. They seem to bear scars as a badge of honor, and some of them do. You know, others are kept very secret, though. People are ashamed of whatever it's been in their lives that has resulted. Some scars are on the body. Others are on the heart. And whatever, scars mean that you've been hurt, and they mean that you've survived. They're a sign of life beyond whatever it was that happened. I find that when you deal with people, sometimes they're difficult and hard to understand or hurtful, and often it's because they're scarred in some way. They've been hurt, and now they have this tender spot, this thickness in them, a place that maybe no one will ever know about, but it makes them scarred. They've survived, maybe in the only way they knew how, maybe in the only way they could. This is wedding preparation season, and Always with couples, I talk about wounds and scars, the ones that are on the inside. And one of the privileges of being in an intimate relationship is that you get to know those places in the other person, those tender spots. Sometimes it takes a long time to discover that. And often we do it the hard way, by touching a weak spot without knowing that it is, and the reaction isn't what you expected or understand. And one of the ways we love each other is to become aware of those places in the person we love. And if we touch them at all, we touch them tenderly, gently. You know what I mean? Before I go on, it's important to say that not all hurt is from love. Not all wounding is a blessing in the end. Suffering and pain are not intrinsically good. Too much poor preaching has glorified suffering. And I do not intend to do that, not at all. However, properly cleansed and tended, many hurts do heal. And scars can toughen us, and we really can use them, or rather God can use them, in ways that we can only begin to imagine. So on a very personal level, whatever the pain that you've endured or are enduring, whatever the wounds on your body or spirit, I pray for you that the scars will become for you signs that you endure, that life endures, that you're strong and that you're healing, that love is real, and that those scars will become a way to hold that truth perhaps before others as well. As individuals, we all have wounds, all of us, and there are still wounds on the body of Christ. As a church universal, we are divided in so many ways, you know. I don't need to explain that. And each congregation and each denomination has its own wounds and its own scars as well. We're coming up to annual meeting time in our own congregation in June, and we'll be thinking about our own church here in Whitehorse. And taking a look at our strengths and our weaknesses, where we have wounds. The visioning committee is working hard, or has worked hard, and now the others. Honestly taking a look at our body, as if standing naked in front of a mirror, going, okay, what do we look like really? What are our gifts? What are our deficiencies? Where are the places where we're really toned, that we've worked on? What's a little flabby? And where are our scars? And how might God use them to be a blessing to others? And what is it that God is calling us to be as a congregation? And to do that, you just got to be honest, you know. With many other churches around the world, one of our wounds, I don't know if you'd call it that, is the size of us. Church membership is shrinking, that's just how it is. And when we look to the future, we say, what will this mean? In society, there's an increasing not only apathy, but stronger than that, rejection of the church. Fewer people willing to take positions of responsibility or even to attend. And there are many reasons for that, I understand. I understand those, but sometimes it feels kind of like an amputation in the body. I want to hold up what I think is the strength and hope of a smaller church. I think that communities... Before I came to you, I came from serving really tiny churches in the Maritimes, often people, 20 people on a Sunday. But as all churches shrink, what I think small churches can offer, and they have spiritual gifts in abundance, and God has work that small churches are uniquely positioned to do. Here's what I think. I know you really want to know. The United Church of Canada has a history and an ethos and a theology that has been hard won. And I'm proud of that. It's left us with wounds and scars as well. And that heritage, wounds and all, makes us uniquely positioned to offer the grace and love of God to people who believe that there is no place for them in a church. We have something to offer because of our wounds, because of our struggles and resulting scars. For example, in the United Church of Canada, by design, there is no set of doctrines to which you must give intellectual assent to be part of us. When we came into being in 1925, those people made the statement of belief as broad as they could so that as many people as possible as joining churches could feel comfortable there. And they said, 1925, they said, we fully expect, this is where we stand theologically right now. But we don't know everything. And we know that God is revealing herself. That's not what they said. But God is self-revealing. And we're going to learn so much more in the years to come. And we fully expect that the church in the future will rewrite its doctrine, will rewrite what it believes, and continue to do that. Because we're not God. Only God is God. And we just keep learning. If we're open, we just keep learning. So, and the church has, the United Church of Canada has done that 4 times now. And it didn't, when we rewrote in 1940, then again in 1968, and most recently in 2011. And we didn't reject the last statement of faith, we held them all together, saying, this is us at the moment. Right? So, some people might call that wishy-washy. Okay. I call it humble and realistic, and it's grounded in a really strong theology that only God is God. We don't know everything. We make no claim to know the full truth. And the final revelation of God's will, we don't know. We're doing our best. And to say otherwise is, in my opinion, idolatry. We try to follow the spirit of life and truth as she gallops through the world, and we try to support one another as we do. Period. So, there's strength in that. There's also, it leads us in places that make you shake your head sometimes. But that's what we have to offer. That's what we have to offer. And I think it would be a great loss were that tradition to be no more. So, there. I've told you this story before, I'm sure. When the last time I was doing official studying, I read a book by Alice Mann, who was working at the Alban Institute, and they did some research, and they asked people all over the place, what do you want in a church? This is kind of late 90s. What do you want in a church? And so there's all kinds of answers, but one guy they quote, and he was a retired CEO of some big company. And he said, I want a church with a plan, with a 5-year plan and a fiscal, I want organization and I want to take. And they said, okay, what do you personally, what do you want? And he said, well, I want a place where my grandchildren will learn about God. That's what I want. Okay? And they said again, but you, yourself, what do you want? And he said, I want a place where there are a few people who care about me. And you don't have to be a mega church for that. In fact, when you're a small church, you can do that better. People are hungry for God. They're hungry for community. They're hungry for something real, and we can offer that. You can offer what many people so desperately search for, a place where someone just looks you in the eye and cares about you. A place where adults and children can say, I'm scared, I'm confused, I'm messed up, I have lots of doubts, I don't know what I believe, can I still be here with you? And the answer is absolutely yes. This is exactly the place for you. You don't have to have it all worked out. You don't have to put away your doubts. In fact, like Thomas, they can be gifts to us. You don't have to be anything or anyone but who you are, and you are welcome here. I say that every week. Sometimes if you're here every week, you've all heard that already, but it's important. This is a place where we will pray for you and with you if you wish. This is a place for you to belong. There are sadly few places like that in the world. You are uniquely gifted for that. Image in church language these days is the small church. You know, there are churches that are like Walmart, like a little bit of everything. You can get whatever, you know, they have a youth group and an older person's group and a this and a that. And small churches don't have that luxury. We don't have the resources, human or otherwise. But we're a boutique. Right? We're not Walmart. We're a boutique where we specialize. And we're excellent. We offer one or two things in an excellent way. And those things can be care for one another, serious care for one another. So what's our specialty? You can offer a place where people are welcome, scars and wounds and all, where we can see each other real, where we don't have to be perfect in belief or action. This is the peace that Jesus offers. This is the unspeakable gift of peace, a place and a person where you are loved, doubts included, where we have an opportunity for intimacy that calls forth not so much a loud cry of faith as a whisper that sounds maybe something like, my Lord and my God, that sounds like home. So I pray that the God of Thomas, who treasures doubts and doubters, who can bring life out of death and hope out of despair, may that God be with you today and always, and may God bless you as you think about these things. Amen.